U.S. factory activity slowed.
Based on hitting a shareholder value as market capitalization.
A lot more global. So creating more programming not only for, you know, us here in the English-speaking U.S.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And welcome to Friday afternoon and the long holiday weekend. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, coming to you from the Allstate Showcase Studio on this Friday afternoon. We've been talking a lot about the development in the city and as well as in the Southwest Loop. And Danny Ecker will be here a little bit later in the program to talk about, you know, the old post office is being redeveloped, a big rehab of Willis Tower. And a lot more there, too. So we'll talk to Danny Ecker a little bit later. We'll talk about getting pulled over for marijuana in the second half hour. But right now, well, where is your savings account? Is it in your local bank? Did you just bag it? You just have a checking account? Bankrate is out with a study saying that there is money to be made again, or at least a little more protected in savings accounts. And to talk about that on the phone line is Greg McBride. He's been with us several times before, Chief Financial Officer at Bankrate, the analyst, I should say. Greg, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Good afternoon, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so, you know, I kind of think that most people have just kind of given up on savings accounts, that, you know, we've got a checking account, and if there's any interest we get it, but there's really no sense in worrying about it. You guys are out with a study saying there are some opportunities to actually make a little money.
Yeah, it's time to pay attention again. Now, you know, interest rates were at near zero levels for the better part of a decade. And, you know, when interest rates were low, there just wasn't that much disparity between what different savings accounts were paying. Now that interest rates have gone up, that disparity has widened. So, you know, while there are still no shortage of banks that are still paying a fraction of 1% on savings, we find more and more, particularly online banks, paying between 2 and 2.5%. And we've also saw quite a number of accounts that are paying yields above 2%, are available nationwide, and have no minimum deposit. So, you know, I call that the no excuses account, one that really everybody should have.
But the fact is that we're still a little reluctant to give our money to an online bank, right? Is that what's holding people back?
Yeah, and it's interesting when we ask people, like, okay, so why won't you move your money someplace else? You know, the excuses were, well, I'm comfortable with my current financial institution. I prefer to have branch access. I'm worried about the security of my money. Those were the top three answers. And, you know, the reality of it is, each of those three is really easily refuted. You don't have to give up your current setup with your current bank. You don't have to give up the branch access. Open an online savings account. Link it to the checking account that you have at your current financial institution. It becomes a supplement to your current banking arrangement, not a replacement for it.
Greg, did anyone say that they missed seeing their balance stamped in their passbook? Because that was my favorite part of a savings account.
Interestingly, nobody said
no,
that.
No, didn't come up. I didn't realize you could link them. When I was reading the study, that you could link an online savings account with a brick-and-mortar bank that you have your other accounts with? How does that work?
That's actually going to be predominantly how you fund the account. And so you move the money through the ACH transfer back and forth, and, you know, makes it easy whether you're moving some money over at the end of the month to put into savings, or, you know, you have an unplanned expense, you need access to that savings, you can move it over from your online savings account, and it'll typically pop into your bank account within 1 to 2 business days. So
I guess it's
very easy and no fee for doing it.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I guess it's really what we do anyway. I mean, I might have a savings account and a checking account with one bank, and I'm going online to move my money from one to the other. That's what we're talking about with these online banks anyway.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's really the same sort of situation. There's a little bit more of a lag time because you're moving it from one bank to another. But, you know, you're more than well compensated for, you know, that lag time. I mean, you know, most banks of the national average right now on a savings account is still 0.1%. You can easily lift your interest earnings 25-fold just by moving to an online bank.
But it still is only 2%. And so if you're not talking about a big chunk of savings, I can see why people might lack the motivation to move.
When you think of it in terms of dollars and cents, like what's the additional interest earnings I'm going to earn, if you've got a small balance, it's easy to think like that. And in fact, you know, about 25% of people said that that was why they didn't look to move their money to an online bank. But here's another way of thinking of it that I think is really critical for savers, regardless of how much or how little you have, and that is inflation runs at about 2%. Right. So the ability to earn more than that is the difference between preserving the buying power on your money or not. And I think that's really the way to be thinking about it. You know, you work hard to squirrel away, you know, every dollar you can into that savings account, and you put it in a place where there's no risk of loss, so it's there when you need it. Well, so, take the next step and make sure that it still buys what you need it to buy at the time when you do need it.
Right. So the motivation might not be that you're going to make a lot more money. The motivation might be that you're not going to see your money dwindle away because of inflation while it's sitting in a low-interest account.
Yeah, and as I tell people all the time, you know, leaving money in a low-yielding account and falling behind inflation, over time, that loss of buying power, it's just as damaging as a mm-hmm. loss of principal. And we're finally in a position where savers don't have to be in that position now.
And you have some accounts to look at up online?
Yes, we do. We have a free search engine at bankrate.com. You can look at an entire list that we're updating constantly. And, you know, as I said, plenty of accounts with no minimum deposit and that are available no matter where you live in the 50 states.
Greg McBride, Chief Financial Analyst at bankrate.com. Greg, great talking to you today. Thanks very much. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Steve. Have a great weekend.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. Speaking of Hart, Schaffner, and Marks, guy is always very well dressed when he comes in the studio. Tom Gimbel here, the founder and CEO of the LaSalle Network.
I have a couple of their suits as well.
I actually had a jacket from their outdoor sale last year, so it's a great event.
It is a great event.
Okay, so I'm reading this article in Fast Company because it interests me. How to find out you didn't get the job. Like, you interview, and it wasn't for you, but... why you didn't get the job.
Yeah.
And then I see the first guy quoted is Tom Gimbel, the CEO of the LaSalle Network. So tell me about this idea, because I'm thinking, you know, you go, you interview, you get maybe a second interview, third interview, you don't get the job. And are you entitled to find out why?
Yeah, I think you are. It really depends on the level of position, B, who you were interviewing with, and C, how far along the process you went. If you had a phone screen and you didn't move on to the second round, no one's going to.
They're not going to care.
If you go in and you meet with the HR person, you have to assume that they didn't. You can still ask them, but it's more of a screening process. You get into the aspect of you've met with the hiring manager and maybe even their boss, and you didn't get it, for you to want to know why you didn't, is very reasonable.
It's reasonable, maybe, but is it reasonable to expect the people who did not choose you to explain why they didn't?
Yeah, it's again at the level of which you are in a department for where you're going to get feedback. But this is a long term game. Life is a long term game, and people know that you're going to cross paths with people again and again and again. And to call up and say, or to email and say, I realize I didn't get it. I totally understand that there's choices to be made in business. However, if you can give me any insight into what I was lacking, right? The big problem is most people don't want to go under the assumption that they were lacking.
Right.
They want to say, you made the wrong decision.
Come on.
Yes. And if you don't go in it defensively and you don't go in it accusatorily, but you go in as saying, I want to learn so I can do better the next time, it goes a long way.
I suppose you have to present it sincerely, but you probably ought to be sincere about
it.
Because
the real question is this. You might love a job and want it so much. Can you really say that you want the company to hire the best person, or do you want the company to hire you?
Well,
think about that.
I would prefer the company hired me, because if it's the best person, I might never get a job.
Oh, well played. But that's really the issue. It's like, when do you want somebody you love to be happy, or do you want them to be with you? I think, and hopefully every once in a while you'll find somebody or a job where it's one and the same. But you know what I mean.
For sure.
Is that if you really want everybody to be best, you need to be in a job where they feel you are the right person. And if they're not, you want them to get it.
Why is it that they don't get the job? That they're not qualified? That they people...
There's a variety of reasons. Number one is they found somebody who had a certain set of skills that you didn't have, whether it's software, whether it's client experience, industry experience.
Number two, they were always going to hire from inside, and they were just sort of blowing smoke to invite you.
Well, you know, it's I don't mean this from a racial perspective, like the Rooney Rule in the NFL. They know who they want to do, who they want to hire, and they have to go through a process right. just to appease HR or whatever that may be. That's a real situation, and that does happen. But there's also another thing that people overlook. They just didn't like your personality. And that doesn't mean they didn't like you. That it just means your personality for what they want, the team they have, isn't right compared to somebody else.
But is an HR manager or someone who's doing the interview, are they going to say, you know, Tom, you got great papers, but we just didn't like your personality?
No, but what they might say is, as we were going through it, we had another candidate who we felt was a better fit. And let's learn to read between the lines.
Right, okay. Because so we can expect the managers to be honest with us in the answers, or we just have to decipher what they're going to tell us?
Both. Yeah. I think you have to be able to decipher. But every once in a while, you get somebody who says, and you might even say that is, I know that you're probably limited in what you can share with me. However,
right.
if there's any feedback you can give me off the record, in air quotes, right, that I'd really love to know so I can improve.
I suppose there might be in times when they're actually relieved to tell you, you know, hey, we really liked you doing this, but unfortunately, we just couldn't go this way.
Every once in a while, I'll tell you what happened, Steve. They actually respect how you handled it with the tact that you actually want to improve. And when something happens to the first candidate, maybe they get a turn down, a counter offer the person accepts, they call you up and they go, you know what? We really liked how you handled it. We got a role for you.
Another piece of advice in this article, which I think is good, is make it an email.
Yes.
Don't call.
Yeah. It's, well, especially in this day and age, right? Your voicemails are going to go there. It's easy to delete it. In an email, if you can write it the right way, and you should write drafts of things, and you can craft the message, you'll get people to respond.
Tom Gimbel is the CEO of the LaSalle Network. Follow him at Tom Gimbel.
Yep.
On Twitter and LaSalleNetwork as well, .com.
Yep.
Thanks for coming by, friend.
Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Eric Rung. Eric will be back with a check of Wall Street in just a few minutes. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch in Chicago's very own 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. All right, you know, Governor Pritzker says that one of the things he wants to do this legislative session is to pass a bill to allow for the legalization of marijuana. It's something that's spreading around the country, obviously, around the world in many ways. And one of the arguments against it is that it's difficult to figure out who's driving under the influence of marijuana. Easier done with alcohol than it is with not just marijuana, but perhaps cocaine or prescription drugs as well. In fact, in 2005, prescription medications were found in more than 46% of U.S. drug drivers involved in fatal crashes, prescription medications. So how does law enforcement guard against that? Abbott, as an answer, or at least they're working toward a solution. Frank Delfino is on the phone line. He's the North American product manager for Sotaxa, joins us now. Frank, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Great to be here. Thank you, Steve.
I'm sorry, Fred. So, I said Frank. I meant Fred. Is it pronounced Sotaxa?
Sotaxa.
Sotaxa, okay. And so this is something that police would use, what, in when they pull someone over just to see if they're using drugs?
Yeah, so given this is the time of the year, a lot of folks on the roadways, we have vacations, graduation, prom. Of course, we all want our loved ones to be safe out on the highway. So as you had mentioned, there is a growing threat of drug driving. We've seen the trends of drunk driving decreasing, but we've seen an alarming rate rise of drug driving as well. So I spend a lot of my time working with law enforcement officials around the country, and they're very concerned about this growing problem. As you had mentioned, in 2016, we've seen nearly half of the drivers fatally injured in car crashes test positive for drugs. That's over almost 60% increase over the last decade. More than half of those drivers had marijuana and opiates in the system, or a combination of the two. So, yes, the good news is Abbott has developed new life-changing technology to help prevent those deaths from happening. It's called Sotaxa. So what Sotaxa is, it puts rapid drug screening for safer roads in the officer's hands. So it helps helping police quickly test a driver for drug use along the roadside.
So the police pull someone over. He's been driving erratically, or she has been, or the police have a suspicion for one reason or another. They pull this person over, and then what? They take a swab from inside their cheek, or how do they get the saliva sample?
they pull them over for whatever the driving, erratic driving might be. The Sotoxa system simply works by you collect an oral fluid sample in about 60 seconds, and then it's inserted into the test cartridge, and the instrument will detect up to 6 drugs in just 5 minutes. It's fast, simple to use, accurate test system.
Okay, but here's the problem, Fred. It will test, it will show that I have marijuana in my system, but we're not quite to the point where we've agreed on whether or not that means I'm impaired by marijuana, right? That's still a hurdle.
Exactly.
So how do we overcome that? Or how is law enforcement still interested in this product short of that?
Law enforcement is very interested in this product. We're talking with law enforcement officials in states all across the country and Canada as well. You know, as you know, today there's limitations on how they can test drivers. So that makes the Sotoxa by Abbott an attractive tool in addressing the problem of drug driving and to keep our roadways safe.
I know that they were trying to implement it nationwide in Canada. I don't know if they're quite there yet. They had some regulatory issues everywhere. But in Canada, how is it working, or how is it being received there?
It's just launching in Canada, and it's being received very well. So Tox has just been approved for use in Canada as well for the detection of THC.
But how are they using it then? Because you have THC in your system doesn't necessarily mean you were an impaired driver.
Steve, what happens is it's a two-prong approach. So Sotoxa is the toxicology side of that decision, giving the assessment of drugs in the system right by the roadside, giving value to the officer. The officer is also going to run their standard field sobriety tests along the roadside and go through a process of identifying the impairment. Let's not forget that the stop occurred, maybe it was a crash, maybe it was erratic driving. Right. So it's a compilation of several factors, and Sotoxa results is just one of those, validating that the officer saw something in the standard field sobriety tests. The Sotoxa pulls a positive result. Maybe it pulls a negative result. So it's either going to, you know, confirm their findings or release the driver if they're not using drugs.
So perhaps where a breathalyzer test is in many ways definitive evidence of DUI, in the Sotoxa case, it would be corroborating evidence. It wouldn't be the entire case. It would support evidence obtained in other ways.
Just like a portable breath test on the roadside, that's the first test they do after they've done their field sobriety test. They're always brought back to the station to do an evidential breathalyzer. So the Sotoxa is a screening tool. We do suggest confirmation testing on positive findings.
So if police are able to agree on a standard of a THC level in your blood as the standard of impairment, could Sotoxa one day measure the levels, or is it limited to just measuring presence or not presence?
So you're getting a positive-negative result based on the detection level set in the system.
Okay.
For instance, marijuana is set at 25, so if they test positive, they have more than 25 nanograms in the system.
So that means then if the police department, if law enforcement decides that 75 is legal impairment, you could set this device at 75 and then judge it that way?
Based on the science, right now it's set at 25. 75 is rather high.
I'm making the numbers up, Fred. I don't know yet.
Yeah. It correlates very well to blood. It's a mirror of what you're going to see in the blood. It's the drugs are filtered through the blood into this oral fluid, and that's where the detection happens. The key here, Steve, is there's a tool for law enforcement. Right now, there's no tool in existence. When they see that driver, and maybe it's not a well-trained drug recognition expert like you have there in Illinois, it could just be a new officer on the road. They do have a tool now to confirm there's drug use on board. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to lead to a conviction. Let's keep in mind here, we're just trying to keep our loved ones safe on the road. You know, Abbott has put the product out for safer roadways.
Well,
it's about saving lives and being safe.
Right, and we're talking about illegal drugs, the use of illegal drugs, but the fact is that the use of legal drugs in many cases leads to these crashes as well. I mean, that's where we are with the opioid situation. So, I want to run this by you again and explain for me. Are you saying that you can set the detection level at different levels of THC in your system, so that if law enforcement were to set a legal limit like 0.01 or 0.08, that you could be measuring for that on the roadway?
So it's not something that's manually set. It's in our manufacturing process. So currently our marijuana is at 25 nanogram.
Okay. In his 25.
So we try to separate the two, right? So you have alcohol testing and drug testing, and the challenge is getting lawmakers and getting the general public to understand two things. Number one, that oral fluid is testing for recent use. We're not looking for historical use.
Okay.
Number two is we can't keep drugs in the same category as alcohol and how we detect it and the laws that we set for them, because they're totally different.
Oh, I see. So I'm trying to make a case for using this this drug test as the way that people use alcohol tests, and that's the wrong argument.
Well, they're using alcohol tests roadside for safety, and that's how we would use the Sotoxa system is to improve safety on our roadways. You just can't detect drugs the same way you detect alcohol.
Okay, so what's the future for Sotoxa? Is this coming to a police department near us one day?
Talks with law enforcement officers all over the country, and Sotoxa currently does provide them a tool that they don't have.
How many police departments have it now, or are they just talking about getting it?
We have a lot of law enforcement officers that departments that have started using it, and we're currently talking with others about doing pilot projects to begin understanding how to deploy something like this on the roadside.
Yeah, well, it's important because I think marijuana will be legalized soon, and I'm not altogether against that, but I certainly am against impaired driving, so it's good to have the balance for law enforcement as well. Fred Delfino, North American Product Manager for Sotoxa. Good luck, Fred. Thanks very much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Walgreens is known for plenty of things, a place to get your medicine, late-night snack. They're basically the Starbucks of convenience stores. But the other well-known thing associated with the business is their annual Red Nose Day. It's an effort to raise money for those affected by childhood poverty. And they've raised a lot of money by selling those red noses. Comic Relief USA is the backing organization, and they've raised nearly $150 million since 2015. The noses are $2, and half the money raised is used for those impacted in the U.S., and the other half makes its way down to parts of Latin America, Asia, and Africa. Just a little something warm and cozy to round out your business week. And while we have that good-feeling momentum, Presight is a Northwestern startup founded by two grad students, and they won the annual Venture Cat competition and got a fat pocket now that they won $30,000. The startup has built a device to screen for premature retinopathy, most commonly found in babies. The tool uses tears to screen patients instead of going through all those uncomfortable tests for babies. Good job, guys. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thank you very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank on 720 WGN. All right, so for years and years, I took the Metro train to work downtown. I would get off the train at Union Station, and then I would stand on the corner and wait to catch a bus that would take me into the city center, because where Union Station was really wasn't much of a city center. Well, it turns out that city center is now moving toward Union Station. Danny Ecker writes about that in Crane Chicago Business, and he joins us on a phone line now. Danny, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, so we've seen, you know, in the past 10 or 15 years, right, different hot areas take off, whether it's a Fulton Market, it probably will be Lincoln Yards in a few years, but this is the time for the area around Union Station and the old post office to really shine.
Yeah, I mean, this is relatively, I guess it's one of those things where it seems like it takes a long time, then all of a sudden it happens quickly, but in the last, you know, year and a half or so, there's just been a flurry of activity right around Union Station and the Old Main Post Office. Obviously, the redevelopment of the Old Main Post Office has had a lot to do with this. But if you look at the investments going into that southwest corner of the loop, between it's $900 million for, you know, turning the old post office into this modern office building. You've got a 1.5 million square foot tower that's going to be coming next to Union Station that BMO Harris is going to anchor, and then Willis Tower is undergoing its own $600 to $700 million renovation, and it's getting a new retail complex along its lower floors. So there's just like a lot more. There's going to be a lot more companies that are moving there. There's a lot of leasing happening, and there's going to be a lot more foot traffic in an area that broker put it to me was said it was I Am Legend. It was like these were just sleepy, quiet streets before.
Well, I was going to say it struck me always being around there sort of decrepit. I mean, you know, the old post office was mothballed, and there'd be plans to revitalize it. It never happened. Union Station, has a beautiful grand hall, but otherwise there's just not much there. It was sort of a place where development stopped. So it's right. Nice to see that it's going to return there, because it really is some of the great Chicago architecture around there.
Well, yeah, you've got the Union Station Head House, which is getting a redevelopment, and they're going to add some hotel rooms into it. And, you know, people have described this area as a no man's land, at least
right.
for companies.
Well,
you know,
so it's
awkward.
I'm going to interrupt you, though, to further that point. Explain for me what Canalcatraz is.
Yeah. So there's a building. Some people, this building kind of looks like, you know, it's kind of a cool looking building. It also kind of looks like Lincoln Logs, depends on what you want to call it. But it's 801 South Canal Street. So this is two blocks south of the old main post office, if anyone can picture that. And it's just a six-story building, pretty nondescript. Northern Trust has had that building for 30 years. They've leased it up for 30 years. They're leaving as they're reshuffling their downtown offices. So that building is about to be completely empty, and the owners are putting it up for sale. So that's kind of going to be a test a little bit of whether you know, the demand is so hot. But well, as I started, you know, talking about and trying to ask people about that building, yeah, that's how it came up. That was sort of within the Northern Trust family, known as Canalcatraz, you know, on South Canal, because it was so far from everything, you know, it was so far from the loop. And so, you know, if that catches on, if Canalcatraz becomes a destination for office users, then you know you've got a pretty hot hand there.
There's a development happening in a lot of different areas in the city, though. Can the southwest corner of the loop sustain its growth?
That's the big question here, because you've got, you know, think about the mega projects that are proposed. You mentioned Lincoln Yards, the 78. Obviously, Fulton Market is still, you know, burgeoning. It's got a lot more construction to go there. So, you know, it really what this is just now it's a formidable player in that mix. So companies looking at their options of where they want to be. This is certainly now a growing one that's attractive. And, you know, it's just the question is, can all this demand? I mean, there's been a ton of demand for office space. Companies been on a hiring binge since unemployment is so low. Everyone wants to be in the city for access to the talent pool. So there is a lot of great leasing that's happening downtown. The question is that going to continue, and what's going to happen to the economy?
Danny Ecker writes more about that at chicagobusiness.com for Crane Chicago Business. Danny, thanks for joining us today. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Also, check out The Daily Gist, the podcast hosted every day here out of WGN Radio and out of Crane Chicago Business by Amy Guth.